This is an oral history recording on the 29th of June 2016 at Westminster School with Elizabeth Wells, archivist, and
Tim Francis.
Right. Would you mind starting off just by talking to us a little bit about your family background, just to give us a bit of context?
My father was a barrister, and my parents were, in fact, my parents had met at the University College of Wales, Aberystwyth, and both reading law. And they both came from a county called Montgomeryshire, which is now part of Powys, and so they were Welsh. And then my father went on from Aberystwyth to Cambridge and was called to the bar, I think, about 1930, and my parents were married in 32. So when the war came, my father was straight in. He was already a territorial, and he was practicing in the Chancery Bar then in London, and he went straight into the Royal Artillery. And my mother and my older sister and older brother and I went to Wales, where we had a house, and that's where we spent the war. And our family home in East Finchley in North London was rented for the duration of the war.
And what are your memories of the war like? Do you remember much?
I was sort of age 3 until 9 during the Second World War, and So I was living on a farm in Wales and not really deprived of anything and in terms of food and so on. I mean, what I do remember was I went to the local primary school in Wales, in a place called Oakley Park, which was walking distance from this is a rural agricultural area. When I went there, half the children there, and I was there from, I suppose, from quite probably just about the age of 4, so say about 1940 until 1944. When I went there, half the children were local children, and half the children were evacuees from Liverpool, living on farms. And the interesting thing is that I can't remember who the evacuees were and who the local Welsh kids were. That's something which never sort of crossed my mind. That's one of my earliest memories. And then in 1944, I got sent to a prep school, a boarding prep school, at the age of 8, which in fact had been evacuated to Mid Wales, about 3 miles from they occupied a large house about 3 miles from the family home in Wales. And then that school moved back, St Wilfrid's it was called, they moved back to Seaford in Sussex. Immediately the war was over, so I suppose I can't remember whether we went back there back to school there in September 45. It was probably September 45 we went back to school there, rather than being in Wales. And so I was at that school until I came to Westminster in 1949.
And was your brother at the same prep school?
And my brother was at the same, my brother a year older than me was at the same prep school. So he was Francis I and I was Francis II, you know, in the way that boys were called in those days and at school. And then we both came to Westminster, and we were both in Busby's, in fact. So he would have arrived in Busby's in 1948, and I would have arrived in Busby's in 1949.
Did your parents move back to London after the war?
Oh yes, because my father, when he was demobbed, he went back to practicing as a barrister in London, and so we would have moved back to the London home about 1945, I suppose the summer of 1945 or late 45. I can remember that the home had actually been hit by an incendiary bomb, and the two ladies who were school teachers who rented it sort of put the incendiary bomb out with what were they called? The sort of a stirrup pump, you know, sort of a manual water spray, you know, and they were able to put this incendiary bomb out. But the wood of the stairs was all still charred all the way down, the banisters. So that was quite spectacular. And you could see a hole in the ceiling where the bomb, I mean, incendiary bombs are quite small things. The hole was, 2 or 4 inches in diameter.
And did your father talk to you much about his experiences? Or
not really. I mean, my parents were I'm not sure of the actual figures, but I suppose during for the whole of the what was that? We're talking about 6 years he was in the army. He and my mother must have seen each other for a total of, what, 6 weeks or something like that? Six or 7 weeks, you know, in dribs and drabs here and there. He'd have a leave and he'd be able to travel and visit. And it was a big strain, really, I think, on marriages, the Second World War, and on sort of young couples being sort of split apart for a long time. And what I do recall about my father, he was in the Royal Artillery, and he was in ACAC, anti-aircraft guns, at Dover for a time at the beginning of the war. But then, of course, the military establishment was growing as time went on, and within quite a short period of time, I would think within a couple of years of the start of the war, he was in the judge advocate. He became a lawyer in the army, you know, I mean, because this is what he did in his civilian life. And so he became a judge advocate general and basically involved with legal cases in the army. And when you have, you know, an army of 1 million or 2 million, whatever it was, men under arms, you know, all with rifles and ammunition and so on, there are quite a lot of incidents which crop up and which have to go before some sort of court martial or some sort of go through some sort of legal process, and so he was involved in that for I would think certainly the last 3 or 4 years of the war.
And even though you lived in London, it was clear that you were going to come and board at Westminster and be
yes. I mean, I think you might say we were weekly boards. We used to quite frequently go home at weekends, you know, go home on a Saturday morning and then come back, I think, on Sunday evening by tube. You know, it's just basically up the Northern Line.
And do you know why your parents chose Westminster, or did you choose Westminster?
No, certainly neither my brother nor I chose Westminster. I think they chose the prep school because really by chance, because it happened to be, in fact, the prep school had been evacuated to Mid Wales, close to my parents' home. So that was why they thought that might be a good route for educating my brother and me. Westminster, I think probably because their home was in North London, they'd be able to see more of us at weekends and things like that. I imagine that was probably influenced their choice of Westminster.
And did you know much about the school from your older brother before you came?
Not really. If you had told me anything, remember we were away. I don't think he would have picked up one or two pieces, but I don't think. I don't recall knowing much about it.
So what were your first impressions? Did you come here to sit an entrance exam to the school itself, or was that done at your prep school?
I think it was done at my prep school, yes. I mean, we travelling around was more difficult. I mean, we were always travelling by train. We went to school, for example, at the beginning of term by train from Victoria Station, and then came back and were probably met at Victoria Station by my parents when we were small. And I'm pretty sure the exam was taken in Seaford at the school, at the prep school. I don't recall coming to London for it.
Mm. So you arrived at Westminster in 1949.
In September 1949, I suppose. I just noticed here that it's called the play term. Mm-hmm. Is that term still used?
It is.
I mean, I the Michaelmas term is the other term for that, of course. But it's interesting that lots of schools have their own sort of their own special language. And so I arrived in 1949, and there was fagging in those days, of course, and so I was a fag. I was in Busby's, then another thing, which a new boy had to learn pretty sharpish, was Latin prayers. And I don't expect they're required to do that now, but
we still had Latin prayers, but, yes.
We were expected to sort of learn them off by heart and recite them to our, really to the senior boys, I suspect. Mm. But as a result of that, I can still sort of, it's amazing what goes into your mind when you're 13, You know, you can still remember it. So, you know, Paternoster, quies in silis, sanctus sita nomen tuum, adveniat regnum tuum, fiat voluntas tua, etc. You know what I'm saying. And so, I mean, that was one of them, the tedium, I think I can recall, and one or two other things. And so it's astonishing how these things you remember as a small lad, you know, you remember all your life if you're. So that amuses me.
So there was an initiation of sorts, really, where you had to learn.
That's right, yes.
And can you remember who your fag master was, who you had to
fag for? No, I can't. He would have been a prefect in Busby's. It was all organised on a house basis. So I can't remember who it was. I think basically the prefects, the senior boys, there would have been a group of about perhaps half a dozen of them, and you were really sort of lowest of the low, and you would clean their shoes and sort of make them cups of tea and all that sort of stuff.
Nothing too onerous.
Not that I can. No, I mean it was, you know, you got through it, and I think that lasted for the first year, if I recall rightly, and then you were through it.
And you were in a dormitory in Busby's with
how many other boys? There were three dormitories in Busby's on separate floors, and they're quite large. I mean, I would think sort of 15 to 20 boys in the dormitory, probably something like that, I think. Mm-hmm. But I should say that in my first year, I didn't live in Busby's. I lived in Barton Street, two Barton Street, where Mr. and Mrs. Craven ran. I think this was a house which belonged to the school, and Mr. Craven was one of the masters, I think. I think there must have been about eight of us, perhaps 10 of us, living in 2 Barton Street for the first year, I think, before we moved into the dormitory in Busby's itself.
And was he a good? Well, I wanted to call him a housemaster, but he wasn't.
Well, he wasn't the housemaster. No, the housemaster was very clearly Mr. Fisher. Mm. I liked Mr. Fisher a lot because I saw quite a lot of him, because not only did he teach me maths, you'll find him. You'll find in here. You'll find his report on me for my first term of maths in play term 1949. But he also was a coach for the rowing, or water, I think it was called. Is it still called water?
Yes, very much.
So, I mean, that's what I did as my main sport at Westminster, was rowing on the Thames at Putney. And we used to row in single sculls and eights, as far as, certainly, that was the main thing. Single sculls was fun, but eights was for the more competitive, and you actually... We had races against other schools and things like that.
How did you get down to Putney to do that?
Oh, by tube. We travelled from St James's Park to Putney Bridge, you know, change at Earl's Court, and this is the same route that you do today.
And did you do that 3 times?
I think it was 3 times a week, and I can't remember for certain which days, but I think it was probably something like Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. I would think, yes. And then the other thing to say, of course, is that London was a much dirtier city than it is now, and the River Thames was a much dirtier river, and so, you know, it was full of the most revolting stuff coming floating down, and so we would be out on an eight and sort of stop to take a breather and have Mr. Preedy or whoever the coach was on the towpath sort of shouting instructions to us as we were resting in the eight, and then we'd hear a sort of bump, bump, bump of something hitting the hull of the eight and moving down, and it would be a dead dog or something, and we'd sort of try to, you know, not to get sick, and you know, it stank, and I think on one occasion there was a dead cow which was floating down the river, so, you know, and these are animals which have been in the river for probably, you know, a week or two or more, and so it was pretty revolting, really. So, but you know, it didn't stop us being enthusiastic about rowing.
And was there a sense that London was still a little bit disrupted in the aftermath of the war?
Well, remember? Oh yes, there were lots of sort of bomb sites and things around, and quite a lot of rebuilding, I think, going on as well. And what I do remember is that building sites were nowadays building sites are much more secure, particularly for big buildings. You know, health and safety is a prime concern, and you can't go on a building site unless you have a hard hat and steel cap boots and all that, toe cap boots and all that sort of stuff. But in those days, you could sort of wander into a building site almost at will. And I can remember the Royal Festival Hall was being built on the South Bank when I was at Westminster. And I can remember climbing all over it, you know, the whole structure, all up to sort of, you know, couple of hundred feet high, whatever it is in height, you know, and on the scaffolding and so on. And that was enormous fun, of course, for a boy, but it would be regarded nowadays as a nightmare, you know. And, you know, what about poor little Johnny's safety or whatever? And
did you get to have many adventures or out and around in London?
Yeah, there was theoretically a sort of limit to how far you could wander, but it was totally unenforceable, of course, and so it was basically ignored. I think theoretically we could go up to as far as Trafalgar Square and Victoria, but not cross the Thames, and but in fact we went much further. I mean, the festival hall was south of the Thames, and I used to quite regularly go to the cinema in there used to be a cinema called the Cameo Cinema in Charing Cross Road, at the southern, not all that far north of Trafalgar Square, but certainly out of bounds theoretically. And we used to, it's not far north, you know. Not far north of the the National Portrait Gallery, and almost up to that crossing where the road goes into Leicester Square, and so there's a Cameo Cinema there, and we used to go and see sort of comic strips and things, you know, comic films and Superman films, that sort of stuff, you know, quite short programs in all, but that was a regular haunt. I mean, on one occasion, I got as far as the Curzon Cinema, which is thought was very sophisticated in Mayfair somewhere, I suppose in Curzon Street, and saw La Ronde, which is a very avant-garde sort of film. Are you familiar with La Ronde? It was sort of one of these sort of French sort of films about La Ronde d'amour, and the story was basically, you know, A and B fall in love and then make love, and then B. And the next scene, B is falling in love with C, and then make love, and then C is, it goes on like this. Then C with D, and so on. So, and then eventually you come back to A with another one. So it was an extraordinary, very. I mean, I'm amused at the. I haven't seen that film I have seen it since I saw it as a 14-year-old or 15-year-old, I may have seen it as a sort of 20 or 30 year old, but I haven't seen it since. But it was quite a sort of a risque sort of a film, really, at the time. So, I suppose we were supposed to be over 16. I don't know. There must have been some sort of restriction on getting into cinemas. I think there was, I don't know whether there was a certification system in those days. I'm sure there was, but we seemed to be able to get in without any trouble.
And was the school disrupted at all by the building work? Were you aware of building work going on?
I don't remember much building work going on at the school. You mean by the school? You mean all of the school?
Yes, I suppose so.
I mean, the school itself, isn't that right? You know, where the big hall, mm-hmm. That's called school. Isn't
that's
it?
Right.
That I think had it was bombed in the war, and it had a temporary roof. I think mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, I suppose it was probably corrugated iron or something like that. Is that right?
Yes.
You think? But you know, we used to go and we had school assemblies there and so on. And I took part in a pancake grease once, and I was selected by I think I was a bit of a little thug as a sort of 14-year old, and. I always seem to be get selected. I was selected by the form to take part. You know, there's one participant from each form who was fighting for this piece of sort of nasty, sort of gooey stuff. But I was also, I also got selected for other things by the house, the head of house. I think that was Cummings. I'm not sure. They would have, for example, there would be inter-house competitions, and there was an inter-house boxing competition, because boxing, of course, took place at schools in those days. And so Cummings came down and asked for, we were all lined up in the, you know, the hall at the that large room at the bottom for Busby's, which is slightly changed now because it's got a sort of mezzanine floor built on it. That didn't exist when I was here, but there was a big hall, and we'd gather there. I think we did prep there, and then we'd gather as a group there. The prefects would sort of rant at us or whatever, and Cummings wanted some volunteers for the house boxing competition, and so basically he said, you. That was the way it was done. You couldn't refuse, and so I got thrown into a boxing competition for my sins.
Was the grease very exciting?
Very, very, yes. You know, because he was, I suppose it was the school chef who had made this concoction. I think it was supposed to be horsehead in it to make it hold together. And there was this bar across the school at about 12 feet, something like that, 10 or 12 feet, and we would all be, all the participants, perhaps a dozen of us, would be standing underneath the bar, and he would be behind with our backs to him, so we wouldn't know when it was going to come over, and so he'd toss this thing over the bar, and then we all sort of fought for our piece of pancake, and so I can't remember who won. I certainly didn't win. I got a small piece of pancake.
And did they weigh the different pieces? Do you remember? Was there a weigh?
I don't remember a weigh. I think it was just had to look, really, and it was pretty obvious who had won it. And then the winner got a silver Maundy coin of some sort.
Now it's a golden guinea. And
oh, really? It's gone up in the world. Yes.
But there would have still been a sort of procession then, I imagine, with the dean.
I can't recall that, but I suppose so, yes.
Can you remember if other people were watching, or was it just an audience made up of the school?
I think it was just the school, yes. All lots of boys all cheering on and things like that, and I suppose sort of masters and so on in the background.
You mentioned Ted Craven and obviously Mr. Fisher, your housemaster. Yes. I was wondering if there any other of your teachers particularly stand out in your memory.
Yes, Mr. Prague, because maths was something I was quite good at, and I had Mr. Prague to teach me maths. Dr. Sanger taught me French. And Mr. Brock, I think, I can't remember, I think Mr. Brock taught geography. There was a man, chemistry was taught by a man, I think his name began with C, I can't remember his name. I remember he spoke with a sort of Yorkshire or Lancashire accent. And Miss
Crumple?
Yeah, something like that, yes. Those are the names I can remember, yes. Oh, and of course you remember the names of the headmasters, and because when I arrived, Mr. Christie was the headmaster. But I think he only stayed for a year, and then he moved on. John Christie, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And then he was replaced by Walter Hamilton, who was obviously younger. One thing I remember about Mr. Christie, who I think he was an affable sort of gentleman, but I can remember him actually saying, you know, that all bright boys should do classics in the sixth form. I mean, I thought even at the age of 15, I thought, how, my God, how sort of backward that is. I mean, I was mildly astonished by that. And then the interesting thing about Walter Hamilton was he was I can remember his arrival. I suppose it was the beginning of a play term, so it had been in September, and we were all gathered up school, and we were all chatting away. We had never seen this man before, and he sort of strode in and strode up the sort of the aisle between the boys sitting on either side. And then he turned, and we were all sort of looking at him and gossiping away, with not giving him much respect. And he turned round and in a loud voice said, "Silence!" And we all sort of hushed immediately. And he was quite a disciplinarian, in fact, and he didn't stand for nonsense. But the interesting thing about Walter Hamilton was that he must have been a man in his mid-40s, I would think, a classicist again, like John Christie. I think headmasters of public schools were probably all classicists in those days. But he got married to a very young lady when I was at Westminster. And so he was still a bachelor when he arrived, but within about a year he got married to this very young lady who was probably half his age. Say she was in her early 20s, and so much. The interesting thing was that she was much closer in age to the sort of senior boys in Busby's and in the school, so who all rather fancied her, in fact. And so it there was a lot of sort of a rather amusing chat about gossip about that, and so I can remember that.
Did you get many? Were there many women around in your day-to-day life? Because it was an all-boys school.
It was an all-boys school, and all the teachers were men, I think. There was a matron in the house, mm-hmm. in Busby's, and there were maids in Busby's as well, to keep the place clean, I suppose. So the matron, I can't remember the name of the matron who was at Busby's, I think for the whole time I was there, but she was what I do remember was she had a little Cairn terrier, a yappy Cairn terrier, which irritated us boys a lot because this silly little dog yapped so much. And then one day she took it for a walk in St. James's Park, and it got mauled by an Alsatian and was really affected. I think was actually quite badly injured and had to go to the vet and things as well. But the little Cairn terrier was silenced for several weeks, and all of us boys thought that was wonderful, you know. And the matron was distraught, but we thought it was great news. And then there's another little bit of scoop, this little news. It was one of the maids was made pregnant by one of the senior boys in Busby's, who was then expelled. Well, the maid disappeared and the boy disappeared. That's all I remember. But that was rather interesting. So, you know, people misbehaved, shall we say, in those days, you know, just as they do now.
And you all knew what was going on, even though there was an attempt, presumably, to hush it up in a way.
All we knew was that this is why... I can't remember which boy it was. This boy was no longer there, and why the maid was no longer there. That's all we knew, I think. So we had pretty limited information about it.
You mentioned about the headmasters being classicists, and yes. John Christie yes. even going so far as to say that if you were yes. bright, you must do classics
yes.
in the
same yes.
form. Yes. You also said that you liked mathematics.
And I thought the maths teaching was terrific, very good. And I benefited from that because I went on to have, although I left Westminster at the age of 16 because I thought I wanted to make the Navy my career, and I went to Dartmouth at the age of 16 and was at Dartmouth for 2 years before I went off to sea. By the time I was about 18 and a half or so, I realised that I didn't want to make the Navy my career. So I extricated myself from the Navy and went to university when I was 21, and went up to Cambridge, in fact, and became a scientist and did a degree in natural sciences with physics part two, and then did a PhD in marine geophysics. Thanks, I think, to my good mathematical grounding at Westminster, and I also had good maths teaching at Dartmouth as well. I think that helped me in my in my career as a scientist.
Do you remember much of the science lessons here? Were they
Except for chemistry, I remember remarkably little, in fact. I don't know why. I mean, because there must have been some, but I just don't recall. I mean, the thing about chemistry, of course, there was practical chemistry, and you were, you know, pouring acids into, you know, you were diluting acids and titrating things, and that was quite fun, actually. And but I don't remember much else of science lessons.
And the labs then would have been on Great College Street, I think.
I think across. Yeah. I think they were across the road, weren't they, from Busby's in Great College Street, but before you get to Barton Street. Mm. Are they still there then? Or?
Well, no, they've moved. We have a new science centre. And towards Smith Square, actually.
Oh, okay. Is that still school property?
It is still school property, and it's art.
Yes.
But also some geography.
Yes.
There's some Latin taught there.
Yes, yes. So it's classrooms of various sorts.
Yes. It's for a variety of things. Yes. But no more labs.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's changed.
Mm. Yes.
And what do you remember of the food?
Oh gosh, I can remember where we ate. You know, when, it's the same place they eat now. I think right next to the dean's house in that little that corner of Dean's Yard. You know, as you head towards the Abbey and you go into College Hall, and I can remember eating there. But I can't remember. I mean, I'm sure I ate it. I know I ate, you know, I mean, I had a good appetite, but I just don't recall.
People hardly ever can.
I find
it interesting.
Yes, yes. I mean, I imagine, you know, main meals were some meat and two veg or something like that, but I just can't recall.
What about extracurricular activities, things that you... We've spoken a bit about water and rowing.
Yes.
Were you involved in any plays? Or?
I wasn't involved in plays. My older brother, Hugh, was involved in plays. I was once involved in a house play, but I never a significant part. It wasn't really my thing, I don't think.
And was there much music?
I certainly wasn't involved in any music at the school. Although I seem to remember there was a music room somewhere near in the bottom floor of Ashburnham House. Was there in those days? But I don't recall. Frankly, I mean, I don't. It wasn't a big thing for me. I mean, I did go through a period trying to learn the piano, but that was at home at weekends, and I think that was a mistake, really. And that I used to go on sort of, if I got home on a Saturday, I think Saturday afternoon I'd have a lesson or something like that. But I never got very far, and I think I gave it up after a year or two. So music was never a big part of my life, although I know it is, you know, a big part of the school now.
And were you in the combined cadet force?
Oh yes. The combined cadet force was quite a thing in those days. I mean, I think we gathered once a week and paraded and did various things. There was most of the cadet force was in the army, and then there was a naval section as well. There may have been an Air Force section too, but I don't recall. And I think you all started off in the Army section, but then I eventually went into the Naval section, and I can also remember going to. We used to have field days, which was great fun, in fact. And we had field days. You know, we had rifles, and the rifles we had were. The Enfield 303 rifle, which is the sort of standard issue of rifle for the British Army during the First World War and the Second World War. I think the 303 rifle was originally issued to the Army probably about the beginning of the 20th century, I think, perhaps something like that, and was the main weapon, infantry weapon for 50 years or so, the same life form. And you know, we did our square bashing and our sort of rifle drill and all that sort of stuff. But field days, we went actually, which were fun because we were issued with blank ammunition, and we went to Richmond Park and sort of ran around in the undergrowth and so on and tried to ambush each other or whatever we did. But and of course there were deer there as well in Richmond Park. Is it red deer in Richmond Park? I'm not sure. But one interesting thing was that some boys, and this is really quite naughty when you think about it, used to they'd have some dates and they'd eat the date and then the date stone, which is quite a long sort of a bullet-shaped sort of piece of woody material, they'd push that up the barrel before they put the blank into the breech, before they loaded the blank. And so they'd be firing a projectile, namely a date stone. I don't think it would do much harm because it would almost certainly tumble as soon as it left the barrel of the gun. But it was one of those things which a few boys got up to if they happened to have their hands on some dates. Nobody ever got injured from that, but I suppose we were told not to fire a blank off a point blank range or somebody in the face because that could have been damaging. So people weren't injured. So I think it may sound more dangerous than it actually was.
And is this the point at which you decided you wanted to go into the Navy then?
I'd been at prep school in Seaford in Sussex, and mm-hmm. so by the sea, and I think it was the influence of masters there. Who had sort of got me interested in the sea, and I'd sort of decided that would be an interesting career. So this would have been when I was 16, so that would have been 52. In the summer of 52, I'd have taken the Dartmouth entrance exam, and also done my O levels as well in that summer, So I was able to get into Dartmouth and started the next term in September 1952 when I was age 16.
And were there any other sort of activities that you did at Westminster? Were there any trips out? Yes, there were.
I can't remember how they were organised or whether it was on a sort of form by form basis, I think, but probably a group of about sort of 20 boys, a dozen boys, 20 boys, something like that. And we went and visited one of the Fleet Street newspapers. And of course, in those days, the newspapers really were in Fleet Street. And I think it was the Evening News we visited and saw it being printed. And we were taken through the whole process of how it was done, you know, the linotype machines and the compositors and all these sort of things, and then these newspapers coming off in vast quantities to be sort of rushed around London. So I can remember going to see that, and then another thing we went to was there was a big Guinness brewery in Park Royal. I'm not sure if it's there anymore, but they had these huge sort of vats full of the beer, which was sort of like size of a swimming pool, you know, full of beer which was fermenting and so on, great sort of silos full of barley and what have you. It was actually quite interesting to see a sort of a big industrial process like that for making beer. Those are the two I can remember.
Can you remember who took you on these trips?
I can't.
That's interesting. And were you involved in the College Street Clarion at all? The Busby's?
No. What I can remember, actually, one of the things that, now that you mentioned, an extracurricular activity in 1952, of course, the Queen, King George VI died, and I can't remember quite what time of the year it was. It was early in the year, I seem to remember, in 1952. And so the combined cadet force was trotted out to add to the soldiers lining the route. And so we all lined the route with our, in our uniforms, and in my case it was with in a sailor's uniform, and with a Lee Enfield rifle and so on, and lined the route for the King's funeral, King George VI's funeral at the bottom of Whitehall. And then, interestingly, only a year later, by which time I was in Dartmouth, the Westminster CCF was not involved in lining the route and for the coronation, but cadets of Dartmouth were. So I found myself in London again in the uniform of a cadet in the Royal Navy, again with a 303 rifle, lining the route at the bottom of Whitehall. And one of the most amusing things was that we were sort of marched into position, and in the course of that we were marching. I suppose we were brought in by bus and then debussed somewhere, and then marched into our various positions for lining the route. And while marching, I think it was somewhere in Parliament Square, while marching in to sort of line the route at the bottom of Whitehall, we passed a bunch of Westminster schoolboys who recognised me in spite of my uniform and so on, so gave a great cheer, which was really rather amusing.
And do you remember many events in Westminster Abbey?
Oh, all I remember, I mean, all I can remember in Westminster Abbey was, I mean, we had morning prayers there every morning, I think. And I can't remember whether that was Monday to Friday or whether it included Saturday or what, but I think it was probably Monday to Friday. I think we started the day, basically. Once we'd had breakfast, we would have morning prayers in Westminster Abbey and then go to lessons. And that wouldn't have been very long. I think it would have been probably about 10 or 15 minutes, and some prayers and singing a hymn and what have you. And so there was a lot of that. So we spent a lot of time in Westminster Abbey as boys, sort of walking through the cloisters and then back again and so on. I can remember seeing Queen Mary in Westminster Abbey. I don't know on what occasion, who was, of course, the wife of George V. But I don't remember any other big events in Westminster Abbey that I went to.
Was there a hierarchy within your house? You spoke about being a fag when you first started.
Oh yes, there are prefects. There are prefects and sort of top of the pile. You know, they're the older boys and sort of 17, 18 year olds. And of course, there was caning as well, you know, corporal punishment. And I was the sort of boy who managed to get caned about once a term. And the process was really quite sadistic in many ways when I think about it. When I met the person who put me in touch with you, Jim Cooper, is it Jim who sent you the email about me?
Jim, our security guard.
Yes,
yeah, Jim Foster.
Jim Foster. Well, he took me around. I was with a lady friend. He took me around Busby's and Shirt, and so it was very interesting because, you know, I could see what had changed. Just the ground floor and the lift was still looked in much the same lift, which goes up all four or five stories, was there. But when you were caned, it was done when you were in your pajamas and dressing gown. So you would have to sort of stay after. All the other boys had gone to, you were about to go to bed, and they were in their dormitories, and if you're going to be caned, you would get into your pyjamas and so on, and you'd go down to that big hall at the bottom of Busby's, and you'd wait until you were called, and it would take at least 10 minutes. I think it was this all part of the rather sadistic ritual, and then one of the prefects would come down the lift and come in and say, "You can come up now, Francis," or whatever he said. And he would then go back into the lift and go up in the lift, and I had to walk my way all the way up five floors to get to the it was a sort of I think it was a room at the very top where they had Busby's, where they had a table tennis table and things like that, and that's where you were caned, six of the best, you know, and you entered this room and there were four or five older boys all carrying canes, each about 5 feet long, you know, and you would sort of walk in. So it's a pretty sadistic process, really, but I seem to survive.
Was your housemaster ever involved, or did he?
No, this was done by most of that sort of discipline was done by the boys, but done by the prefects. I think if the housemaster, you could be caned by your housemaster, but that would be for a more serious offence than whatever. I mean, I can't even remember what I was caned for, but it was probably being cheeky or something like that. I mean, it was pretty minor stuff, I suspect, but that was part of the, you know, the hierarchical system.
Did you have any regrets leaving before you got your chance at the top?
No. Oh, you mean being able to cane other boys and so on? No. I mean, no, not at all. I mean, I was very pleased to be able to get to pass the Dartmouth exam and to go to Dartmouth. So, you know, that was the way it was. I was moving on, but I enjoyed my time at Westminster.
And then you mentioned you went to Cambridge and had a career.
And I went into the Navy and then went on to Cambridge. The interesting thing is, of course, one of the things that I had fortunately done when I was still at Westminster was that I'd done O-level Latin, because in order to qualify for Cambridge in those days, it's a rigid part of the entry process, was that you had to have O-level Latin. I was able to get into Cambridge without ever having done A levels, and that's because in those days, if you think back to the 50s, you know, we still had an empire, quite a substantial empire, and a very big military establishment. But it was all clearly, we all understood that this was a sort of declining thing, and times were changing, and so there were a lot of young men in the services who were thinking, "What am I doing here? You know, I'm in a declining business. What's in for me as a career?" And so they were, having gone into the services in their teens, you know, by the time they were in their early 20s, they were wanting to get out. And it's to the credit of I don't know how many universities operated this system, but it was certainly to the credit of I went to Trinity College, Cambridge, in the end, and it was to the credit of Trinity and some other Cambridge colleges that they always kept a few places back for people from the armed services who were leaving, who they felt were good material for you going to university, but weren't in a position to take the entrance exams. So I got in on that basis. But, I mean, without, really, they were judging me on the basis of my exams in the Navy, the Dartmouth passing out exam and passing out from the training ship, and on the basis of an interview. And so I was interviewed by John Morrison, a senior tutor at Trinity College, and there we are. I was there. And interestingly enough, I met up when I got, although I was 21 when I got to Cambridge. Those were the days of national service as well. So I met up with, I didn't really lose much in the way of time, because I met up with a lot of my friends and acquaintances from Westminster School up at Cambridge, who we re-established contact.
Brilliant. I think that's all I wanted to ask you, but is there anything that you would like to say or remembered that I didn't...
That we haven't covered. Oh, let me have a look. I did scribble down a few back-of-the-envelope notes. We've talked about wandering around London. London fogs, of course. I mean, this is before... This is before the days of, I think the Clean Air Act, if I remember rightly, came in about, I think it was 1956, something like that. But London was, as I said at the beginning, was a much dirtier city in those days, and so we had these fogs, which I loved. You know, it was so, you know, you could barely see across this room, so 20 or 30 feet, and very spooky and great fun for a boy, you know, wandering around London. I was always run over by a tram near Westminster Bridge once, which emerged out of the fog, but I managed to get out of the way. And that's one of the things I recall. And then the street lamps were still gas and lit by a man with a sort of light on the end of a pole, and those gas mantle lamps. I mean, you still see a few of them around in quaint places today. But that was the standard of that. You know, most of the street lights were gas lights. And of course, the gas was not methane. The gas would have been coal gas in those days. I think we've covered it. Oh, Dean's Yard. That's it. We use Dean's Yard, of course, more. Nowadays, little Dean's Yard has become a sort of security haven in a way, with a security to stop tourists and goodness knows who wandering through the school as they would in vast numbers. And it wasn't like that, of course, in those days. There wouldn't have been any tourists of any significant number of tourists. And Dean's Yard, of course, seems to be now, to a great extent, a car park. Although when I was walking here this afternoon, there were some boys playing. I don't think they were Westminster School boys. They may have been choir school boys, kicking a ball around or something like that. They looked younger than Westminster School boys. So, but we used to use Dean's Yard. And I can remember running around, you know, as a running circuit, you know, doing that. And I can remember the CCF, you know, the Combined Cadet Force, we used to sort of march up and down on the road outside there as well. So that's a difference. No, I think we've covered everything I can remember. Mm-hmm. Something will come to mind, no doubt.
Of course, later on tonight, just as you go to bed.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.